is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome to Hour 2 on this Tuesday, September 20th. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. We're underway. Training camp week is underway as well. Fitness testing Wednesday. On the ice Thursday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Let's get right to it to kick off Hour 2 on a crazy busy day in the NHL, including a record-setting contract in Denver. It's time to say hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com, joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk and joins us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, Frank. How are we?
I'm pretty good. You hit it right on the head. Busy Tuesday for pre-training camp medical day.
No kidding. It has been a day, and that includes a Nathan MacKinnon 8-year contract, and now officially the largest AAV in NHL history by $100,000. 8 years, $12.6 million. When you got the text that said it's 12.6, right after you hit tweet, what was your initial reaction on 12.6 over 8 for MacKinnon?
Not surprised, because the talk, Pat, heading into the summer as the Avs were going through their playoff run was Nathan MacKinnon wants to set a record. He had been underpaid for so long. I don't think he enjoyed having that label. In fact, he expressed as much again at the NHL Player Media Tour last week in Vegas, and just he wanted to, you know, get set for his future and his career. Not that he wasn't ever going to be able to make it on $36 or $37 million, but to sign today for an additional $100.6 million, it's pretty incredible and well-earned for a guy that's, you know, helped powered the Colorado Avalanche to their first Stanley Cup in 2 decades this spring. And it feels like a long time coming. It feels like we can now sort of put that to bed, Nathan MacKinnon now, in his rightful place in the NHL pantheon.
One of the questions that we asked earlier this show, and we even asked last week before he signed this contract, was, okay, could Nathan MacKinnon be the highest paid player in the NHL and still give the Avalanche a bit of a discount? Well, now he is the highest paid player in the NHL. Did he take less than he could have taken?
I think the answer to that is always yes, because there's an acquisition cost. More often than not, that it takes a premium to get the player to that's on the market to come to your team. And so in this case, I'd venture to say that someone would have been willing to pay Nathan MacKinnon 13 and a half, $14 million if he were able to hit the open market. And so what does he leave on the table? Ultimately, probably somewhere between $6 and $10 million on an 8-year deal. Is it significant to any of us mere mortals? Of course it is. But when you're talking the difference between $100 million and $108, I mean, what are you talking about? The difference of the size of your boat? And he's got a comfortable position in Colorado with a team that's competitive. And on top of that, Pat, he's got the ability to play with Cale Makar for each of the next 9 seasons, which is incredible.
What is the trickle-down effect on the rest of the NHL now, Frank? What does it look like for the next contract for Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid or whoever you want to point to as that next guy? How does this one affect what comes next?
I'm glad we don't have to think about what that next deal looks like for Connor McDavid, because it's pretty far off in the future. But for Austin Matthews, it's not that far away. Yep. They can put pen to paper on an extension next summer, next July 1. So that's sort of right around the corner. And it's nice that Nathan MacKinnon was able to set the record today at 12.6 million AAV. But I'd have to imagine that Austin Matthews is going to be come chasing that record pretty shortly next summer, with most likely a deal that begins with 13 or beyond on his next contract. I think the bigger question with Austin Matthews isn't necessarily the AAV, but the term, how many years? Because he set sort of his own precedent, signing a 5-year deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs last time around. I have no reason to believe it will be with any team other than Toronto. I think he's loved every minute of it there. The question is, can you get him for 8, or is it going to be another shorter term type deal?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. It's Logan brought up this point last hour, and because, you know, I saw in your replies, I saw in Elliott's replies, people talking about how is McKinnon the highest paid player in the NHL? He's not the best player, but that doesn't really always matter. First of all, he's one of the best players in the NHL. Like, it's two or three or four, so it's not like we're talking about a guy who's being grossly overpaid or anything like that. But the Logan's example was, look in the NFL. Every year it feels like a quarterback is resetting the bar, even if he's not the best quarterback in the league. That's kind of what we're talking about here. It's as much about timing as it is about what you are as a player, and what Connor signed 4 years ago isn't directly comparable or applicable to a deal signed now.
Well, 100%. In fact, it's kind of amazing that Connor McDavid has held the title for so long. I know that there's been a flat cap and a pandemic. All those things have impacted, you know, other guys signing for mega money. But, you know, the idea that one player would hold that title for so long is kind of unheard of. It's happening, you know, annually in the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, at every position where they're resetting that bar, as you said. So McKinnon's got it for now, and he's got that title. And I think in some ways that was important to him after all that he had been through. There was some talk heading into the summer, Nathan McKinnon's going to end up at 15. And I think when he sort of framed it, as he did last week at the player media tour, saying, you know, it's going to be a fair deal, I think this is ultimately in that fair range, because I think you do have the ability to shape your team as the cap continues to grow. They've got one more year at this bargain McKinnon number before it kicks in. So it's really only 1 year of significant pain before the salary cap in 2024 is going up to somewhere around, you know, a $9 million increase annually per year.
Yeah. And just want to double back on one thing you said there, and I didn't have it written down, but you brought up Austin Matthews, and there's been plenty of talk on Twitter and social media about how Austin won't re-sign in Toronto, and how, oh boy, the Maple Leafs might be in trouble in 2 years. They might not be able to keep their best player. You don't buy into that narrative at all, hey?
Not for one second. Like, from the people that I've talked to that are close to Austin Matthews, he's loved every second of his time in Toronto. I think he's crushed it on the ice. I think he's found a fit off the ice that he's really comfortable with. It feels like home. And so he's very happy. I have no reason to believe, unless there's some sort of, you know, catastrophic something that happens, or there's some kind of crazy change in the market or the team dynamic or whatever it is, you know, that's where it's trending is
okay.
An extension with the Maple Leafs.
We're in conversation with Frank Saravelli. He's our NHL insider, joins us on Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. What's happening with some of these other contracts that could be signed, might need to be signed in the next year, or in one case, need to be signed before the start of the season? Let's start with Bo Horvat in Vancouver. That's one that seems like it isn't really going anywhere. Now, there's still a year for things to get figured out, but what do we know about Horvat and initial talks with the Canucks?
Well, they haven't exactly been pleasant to this point, and I think that's created a little bit of friction or consternation. And I caution and preface what I say with the fact that JT Miller was in this boat, although there really wasn't much friction. They weren't in the same ballpark in terms of numbers, and the fact that that deal got done and frankly got done so quickly without much fanfare gives you an idea of how fast things move. Like, what is true today may not be true tomorrow. And I'll be curious to see how Bo Horvat answers questions and spins it once this training camp gets underway. I think the offer or comparison that the Canucks made to Bo Horvat was underwhelming. And they're in a spot now where it's a really interesting, you know, way to head into this season. I think they wanted to try and avoid this with JT Miller, and they were successful. But for a team that is right on the, at least right now, and finished last year, right on the fringes of the playoffs, what's your game plan heading into the season? Do you really want to be in a spot where you're fighting for the playoffs and you might be in a position where you're keeping Bo Horvat and letting him walk for nothing? Or would you rather have that game plan solidified ahead of time and know exactly what, you know, what's going on? Do we have this guy locked up? Is it going to happen or not? And the fact that he's a heartbeat, a heart and soul player for that team, that, you know, it's not an easy circumstance to navigate. So that's what the Canucks are facing as camps open here.
Yeah, it's a weird one with him being the captain of the team, and I think clearly wants to stay there, but also not something that is close to being resolved as it stands right now. Kind of sounds the same with a guy that does not have a contract for this year. Are we any closer on a resolution for Jason Robertson in Dallas than we were when we spoke a week ago?
Not to my knowledge. I think they've continued to work at it. I think it's been very amicable to this point. I'd love to know the sort of different scenarios and terms that they have on the table. But, you know, for a guy that put in 41 goals and 79 points last year, he's such a critical part of everything that the Dallas Stars do. And, you know, clearly to get him into camp on time, I think, is a real priority. And time is of the essence. We saw the continued build that the Stars have made on their back end. You know, you lose John Klingberg over the summer. You trade for Nils Lundqvist, giving up a protected first-round pick to the New York Rangers last night. You know, the Stars mean business. They have to mean business given where they're at and given the sort of tenuous hold that they're probably likely to have on a playoff spot. So they've got work to do, and I don't see them getting there without having Jason Robertson done and locked up.
What did you make of that trade that saw them acquire a former first-round pick, a fairly recent first-round pick in Nils Lundqvist, and a right-shot defenseman? What did you make of that deal with the Rangers and Stars yesterday?
Well, it's a bet by the Dallas Stars. Like, there's no doubt about that. There's a lot of people that think Nils Lundqvist has a lot to give, and it's clear that he wasn't going to get that opportunity in New York when you think about some of the guys that are on their right side. You've got Fox, you've got Trouba, you've got Braden Schneider, who is a heck of a player. Where was that opportunity going to come for Nils Lundqvist in the lineup? They don't have anything to offer, and, you know, they weren't going to be able to create some either with some of the guys that they have on the other side. It's not like you could flip and say, hey, go play the left side and we'll figure it out. This is a talented player that needed a landing spot, and it's interesting that he waited to come over to North America until this trade happened. So this was something in the works. The Rangers held out for their price. They get it with that conditional first round pick and a conditional fourth. And it's sort of, I wonder if we're going to have more moves like this, Pat, over the next, you know, couple weeks before puck drop of the regular season. Is teams recognizing roster holes and excesses and needs and put themselves in a position to make an acquisition before even going down the waivers path, for instance?
I may or may not have been listening to you with Bob Stauffer earlier on this Tuesday. Could one of those players be Jesse Puljujärvi in Edmonton?
He could. Jesse Puljujärvi for sure. Ethan Bear would be another one in Carolina. I think these teams have tried to move these players previously and really all summer, and their price wasn't met. Will the price change? Will they be comfortable heading into the season with the player? In both cases, probably earning a little bit more than what they bring to the table in terms of their contribution to the lineup. And with both teams being at the cap or operating in LTIR, like, you know, every dollar counts. So that's something, those are two players for certain that I have my eye on. And I think you're just talking to a few managers over the last few days, like, hey, what are you up to today? Oh, we're going through every team's roster and looking at players that might not make it that are waiver eligible. Can we make a trade for a guy before mm-hmm. he needs to go on it? That's all part of the preseason calculus.
Just a few more with our NHL insider. Frank Saravelli joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Over the weekend, Winnipeg makes the decision to strip Blake Wheeler of the captaincy. And, you know, it seems like there is a feeling out there that over the summer, Blake asked out of Winnipeg and maybe doesn't want to be with the Jets long term. A difficult contract to move, though, knowing his age and what's still left on it. What's your read on Blake's future with the Winnipeg Jets after Rick Bowness and the team's decision over the weekend?
So first off, I don't believe that to be accurate. I do not think Blake Wheeler asked out, at least to my knowledge. There was a conversation had between the Jets and Blake Wheeler's camp at some point in June as they began to peruse the market. He has a full no move and controls a lot of it, or I think it's a small modified no trade where it's a very limited number of teams. So he holds a lot of the cards. And they had come to him and said, look, we're thinking about making a change. We're exploring a bunch of different options, not just for you, but maybe for some other guys on the roster. And his response was like, I'm open to it. So he was amicable and willing to work with the Jets if they wanted to move him. I don't think any player wants, you know, that's the big thing about no moves and no trades. Like, if you really put a player in a spot, like, no one wants to be in a place where they're not wanted. So there's always a way out of these types of clauses. And so apparently things were all amicable. A trade didn't materialize. And a big reason, Pat, that trade didn't materialize is I think there's a few teams out there that are contending teams that are looking for some brawn and some experience like Blake Wheeler has, but they're not willing to pay that cap price. And the Jets weren't willing to retain salary on Blake Wheeler, not even a little bit. And so that was really one of the big sticking points in terms of making a transaction. And so didn't materialize. You know, he's ready to come into camp, comes to Winnipeg, and gets dealt this news. And I think it was shocking. I think it was something that hurt for someone that took a lot of pride in that position. And it's no doubt going to sting. But let's see how he handles it, and let's see how the Jets start the year.
Yeah, interesting. That's a really interesting situation to watch, especially after you added a little bit more context to the situation right there. What's going on in Philly with there's some uncertainty with Sean Couturier and his injury status and Ryan Ellis as well. Take us into what's happening in your neck of the woods with a couple of important members of the Flyers.
Yeah, nothing good. I'm actually on my way down to the Philadelphia Sports Complex at the moment. I'm going to see the Jays game tonight. They're facing the Phillies. The Flyers are in a tough spot. Sean Couturier, the deal with his herniated disc and his back is they're hoping, wishing, praying that their best forward, it'll self in 6 to 8 weeks. I'm not a doctor. I haven't seen the reports. I don't know what the medical prognosis is on the likelihood of that, but if it doesn't heal itself, he's going to need surgery, I'm told, and that would put him on the shelf for a number of months. Which would really be damaging to the Flyers' chances, I think, to have a bounce-back year. They were already hoping that Ryan Ellis would have been way further along now than he is. He's played exactly 4 games in his Flyers' tenure. After arriving last summer, the big part of Chuck Fletcher's shakeup for this team. And it's fallen flat on its face in terms of his viability and availability. He has made no progress to my knowledge. They've continued to work at it. I think they finally know exactly what is ailing Ryan Ellis. I think they're trying to take as many steps that they can to correct, what's going on, but they don't have a timeline. They don't have very many answers. And there's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to Ryan Ellis and his status. 5 years left on his deal. A massive contract for the Flyers, and they're in a tough spot where two leaders, two guys that should be doing big things for them, not there to start the year and frankly may not be there for a while.
Two more. First of all, Sonny Milano goes to Flames camp on a PTO. Were you surprised it ended up being a PTO, whether it was in Calgary or elsewhere for Milano, and that he didn't end up getting a deal, or was this the way that it kind of seemed like it was going to go?
No, I did have a little bit of surprise because I thought for someone like him who has so much talent, who really found a lot of success in Anaheim with the other skilled players that they have, that he would be able to land a one-year deal, a prove-it type deal, and certainly didn't see it lingering as long as it did after not getting that qualifying offer. But to come to Calgary, like, what an opportunity he has you know, because of that skill. I think the one thing that, you know, I wonder what Daryl Sutter can squeeze out of him. Like, I talk to people around the league who ask about Sonny Milano, and the response I always get from front offices is like, what talent he has, but what is he? Like, what's his attribute? What's his skill set that he right. can hang his hat on? What is he really good at? And it's just, the answer is always, he's just a good hockey player, but what, like, where are you going to plug him in your lineup? What's he going to do? What's his role on a night in, night out basis? Maybe that's something that Daryl Sutter can figure out and squeeze out of him.
And last but not least, just a thought on the retirements of Zdeno Chara and PK Subban. I guess Keith Yandel as well, but you've got in Chara and Subban, you've got two potential Hockey Hall of Fame defensemen calling it a career on the same day. Just look back on a pair of really, really outstanding careers.
Yeah, and I don't want to cut Keith Yandel short. Three incredibly talented defensemen and three different style of defensemen, and Yandel goes out on top as the reigning Iron Man leader for the NHL. To be able to play that many games consecutively and be a power play specialist, really talented guy. But, you know, it's interesting because the Hall of Fame debate is going to rage on for a little bit, and clearly Zdeno Chara, you know, when you look at his career, first all-time in games played among defensemen, 1,680 games, one of the best free agent signings of all time. He really took the Boston Bruins and created a 13-year Stanley Cup championship window where they were so competitive for so long. Three trips to the final, winning a Stanley Cup in 2011, that roar that he got in 2018. The hairs on the back of my neck still stand up thinking about being in the building that night at TD Garden. So, you know, seven-time end-of-season All-Star, just first surefire first-ballot Hall of Famer. Now, with P.K. Subban, I don't see it the same way because, and in fact, he wouldn't be making my Hall of Fame at first blush because he didn't have a sustained and prolonged period of success where he was truly, you know, he was the elite of the elite in NHL circles among defensemen for a period of, like, five, six years, where he won the Norris in that lockout shortened season in 2013, then was a finalist on two other occasions or finished in the top five on two other occasions. And his game really fell off a cliff. I was trying to think today when he announced his retirement, how many guys at age 33 have in a five-year window gone from being a Norris Trophy finalist, you know, guys that aren't 38 years old, mm-hmm. go from being that caliber player to barely hanging on in the NHL, which is what it felt like, you know, he had sort of fallen into over the last couple years in New Jersey. So he moves on, a fantastic career, but I don't know if it's a Hall of Fame one.
Is the Philly sports complex the best sports complex in North America? You've seen lots of it. It's pretty damn good, man.
Well, there's not many that have this kind of setup where you have an NFL stadium, a Major League Baseball ballpark, and a two-sport venue like the Wells Fargo Center for Flyers and Sixers all right next to each other, all walking distance, also now with a casino in the mix. It's pretty good, but I don't love, I got to be honest, having spent so much time in other cities, Pat, how in some ways hard it is to get to and for it being so empty around there, what the parking situation is like getting in and out. It's a pain when there's nothing else there except sports.
See, and as a Philly guy, you would know that more than anybody else. I just thought, just came to my head because mm-hmm. I love it. They all share the same parking lots. It's awesome. Get out of here. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Frankie.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
Frank Saravelli is our NHL insider, Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. Joins us here on Hour 2 of Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast Hotline. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast.
With a retinol intense two-piece facial skincare set from MSM, the Today Showstopper at TSC on September 22nd. Glow all day with a 24-hour cream and a youth concentrate serum with effective retinol. Enjoy the Retinol Intense two-piece facial skincare set from MSM, the Today Showstopper at TSC on September 22nd. Our lowest price is on the way at tsc.ca. Today's shopping choice.
Smile Cookie Week is here at Tim's. Buy one and 100% of the proceeds go to a local charity or community group. Together, we can help countless Canadians. This September 19th to 25th, every Smile Cookie makes a difference at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
We're all feeling the pinch right now. Rising interest rates, gas prices, and inflation are all causing the heated car market to cool down fast. Get the most for your vehicle today and avoid the private sale headaches, hassles, and no-shows by letting Alberta Auto Exports show you just how fast and easy it is to sell your used vehicle. Alberta Auto Exports pays top dollar for all late model luxury trucks, SUVs, sport and performance cars, and offers same-day on-the-spot cash purchase offers. Simply go to albertaautoexports.com and book an appointment that fits your schedule today.
My Mopar service expert asked me if I'm ready for winter. Eugh, I'm never ready for winter. He says with winter tires, your car can be. Now that, I'm ready for.
Below 7 degrees Celsius, winter tires have superior grip to regular tires. At the Get Winter Ready event, enjoy a free seasonal tire changeover with peace of mind maintenance or inspection. And buy three tires, get the fourth free. See your Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram store for details. We built it, we know it.
You know hockey? Play Sportsnet NHL Trivia on Amazon Alexa or Google Assistant. Hosted by Jeff Merritt. New questions every day.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Training camp week rolls on for the Calgary Flames. Getting ready for their first on-ice sessions later on this week as hour two rolls on this Tuesday. Got some training camp questions I want to throw at you throughout the week and bounce off you kind of one at a time throughout the week, so on and so forth. And some of them may be answered early on in camp. Some of them may not be answered at all in camp. But one of my biggest training camp questions for 2022, I think I know the answer, but I'm not 100% sure. Curious what the text line thinks at 960-960. Curious what you think, Logo. It's Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you. Is Jonathan Huberdeau going to end up on a line with Elias Lindholm? And we've talked a lot at different times about what that could look like or what lines could look like. And my answer to that question is, I think so. I think that's the way it's going to go, Logo. But I even go back to listening to Eric Francis talk to Daryl Sutter a couple of weeks ago on the Eric Francis show. And Daryl talked about how he wants to see if Huberdeau is a Nazem Kadri guy or an Elias Lindholm guy. And that gave me pause when I heard the GM say that. So I think Lindholm and Huberdeau will end up together. If I were a betting person, I would have those two on the same line to start the regular season in a little less than a month's time. But I don't know. I'm curious to see how it plays out. I'm curious if on Thursday morning, first on ice session, if those two are A, in the same group, probably, and B, on the same line together. I don't know. And things change as camp goes along. I'm really interested in that one. I really am.
It's nice because I don't think it's a guarantee either way. I think that there's a good chance that Lindholm and Huberdeau wind up as a pairing for the Calgary Flames, but I think there's going to be every indication or every chance given to it in training camp for it to be Kadri. I don't think that the Flames are limited to, you know, I don't think they're forced into having Huberdeau on that line, I think is a nice way of putting it. And I think that they can explore some different things if they want to. Do I think that ultimately that's how they line up best in my mind? Yeah, I think that's where it is. But I think this team has lots of opportunities, not unlike the D pairings that I'm, you know, similarly going to be watching what happens there, Pat, because of the options. So too will I be watching where Huberdeau winds up. Kind of, honestly, both of those Florida guys, I think, kind of fit into that same spot for me, because I think there are different spots that are going to make them, you know, their effectiveness more prevalent. I think what you can do with the lines are a little bit different if you go with a Kadri pair with Huberdeau compared to a Lindholm one. So, yeah, do I think we get there? Sure, but I don't think it's not good. I think training camp's going to have every opportunity to sort that out.
Well, and I remember, not fully vividly, because I didn't feel like going back in the commercial break all the way to September through my tweets, and I don't remember exactly what date it was. But I do remember Lindholm Kachuk on one line and Gaudreau Monahan on another line on the first 2 days of training camp last year. And I believe Coleman was on one of the two lines, and I don't remember. Maybe Mangiapane was on the other. I don't remember fully what, but that's how it started on the first 2 days of training camp, 3 days of training camp leading in to the preseason opener. And look, things will look very different in the preseason opener because it's a split squad game, so a lot of times lines get juggled up and stuff like that. But I do remember that vividly, that training camp started with Monahan and Gaudreau on a line together and Lindholm and Kachuk on a line together. And when the regular season started, despite not seeing a ton of time together during training camp, the Flames started the regular season with Lindholm between Kachuk and Gaudreau and essentially never changed for the next 82 games. And so what you see on day one does really not necessarily, truly, does not mean that you're going to see that start the regular season. So I don't know what we're going to see on Thursday. I'm fascinated. I know everybody's going to be like, what are the lines? What are the lines? What are the lines? But yeah, I don't know if that's something that we see to start and then it sticks. I don't know if it's something that develops through camp. I just, if I were a betting person, I do think that that is the way it's going to go, just because it makes too much sense. You've got your best center and your best left winger. Like, to me, that makes sense. But in saying that, you know,
he also had 115 points, not playing the majority of the season with Florida's exactly best center.
Kind of, and this is no knock on Sam Bennett and Anthony Duclair, who had great years last year. But who was the catalyst on that line? It was the left winger, right? And by the name of Jonathan Huberdeau. And now he has played. It's not like he has not played with Barkov before.
Yes.
He has played plenty of time with Barkov, just not last season.
We've been down that road, yeah.
We have been down that road. His second best season in the NHL, when he was 90-plus points, he played essentially all year that year with Barkov. So it's not like going to play with Lindholm and, oh, well, he's never played with a two-way player like Lindholm before. Well, yeah, he has, because Barkov and Lindholm are very similar hockey players. So, yeah, that's my gut. I do think that's what we're going to see most of during the regular season. But, yeah, I'm with you. By no means is it guaranteed.
No, and it'll be one of those fun things to watch, and that's kind of the biggest difference between last year and this year. I mean, last year we were kind of, you know, we had a few pieces to fill in here or there. When it came to seeing how guys lined up on different lines, and we had a few ideas of what we'd see. Pat, there could be so many this training camp that we see, you know, whether it's, you know, okay, so Huberdeau's with Lindholm, but perhaps they have a different winger. Maybe this time they have Toffoli. Maybe Toffoli is with Kadri and Huberdeau sometimes. Maybe it's Mange. Maybe it's Coleman. I think that the coaching staff right now, as they get set for training camp beginning on, you know, Wednesday with physicals and then into the on-ice sessions on Thursday, I think this time, you know, getting prepared for training camp has got to be a very fascinating one for them, because A, they have all these new pieces that they don't know how they fit together, but I think there's legitimate conversations to be had about, you know, Huberdeau playing with Kadri, moving Coleman up, you know, to play in a top six spot compared to playing him with Backlund. Where does Milano fit? I think there are a lot of legitimate conversations you can have about different alignments for this forward group. And I think the biggest one, you're right, is going to be centered around where Jonathan Huberdeau winds up.
And if he doesn't end up with Lindholm, that's fascinating too, right? Because,
well, yeah, Kadri just showed he's no slouch offensively last year either.
Could have had 100 points.
If he played 82 healthy, games, he probably would have, yeah.
Been at 100 points, at least the pace he was on. So I don't, and if you go about it that way, if you have Lindholm with, well, then maybe you're talking about a 1A, 1B situation when it comes to your lines. I don't know. I do think typically in situations like this, yeah, you probably end up playing those two together, and Daryl probably goes that way. But also, I don't think Daryl's like, you know, Steinberg said that I should play Lindholm with Huberdeau. I think I'm going to go with what Steinberg.
I actually thought that's what he was basing it off of.
In the past, yes.
Oh.
But last year, he stopped listening to me, and look what this experience.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's about time.
Obviously, we jest. But, yeah, he has a really good read for these things. And so, if that is not the way that he goes, I'm going to be far more like, okay, let's see, as opposed to, that's not the right call. I'm going to be like, okay, I wonder what Daryl sees as to why that's not the case. Because for us on the outside, who don't have the feel for it the way that a future Hall of Famer does, it kind of looks like, yeah, this seems pretty simple that you go with your best center and your best left winger.
And there's so much time to go through it, too. You know what I mean? Like, what you're right, thinking back to last season and how training camp started then. Training camp, like 3 weeks long of this with different games and different levels of importance. And, you know, I remember ramping it up into the last game of last preseason, you know, and Daryl putting the importance on, okay, now the regulars can come in and now they got to start doing that. So really, you know, can you throw the game tape out for the regulars the first week or so before the games actually start meaning anything? Probably, right? And then when you get to that last, what is that? I think Winnipeg's the last game before you kick things off against Colorado. And even then, you have five days from your last preseason game to your first game of the season. There's a lot of time for things to change and evolve, not just throughout the preseason, but as we get closer to that home opener. There's, you know, doesn't seem like a lot of time, and it's great that we're starting to have these conversations about a game on Saturday. That's incredibly exciting for me.
Sunday.
I thought it was Saturday. Oh, no, it is Sunday. You're right. The doubleheader. The split squad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's still a long time away before the actual season gets going.
And I believe we're going on the assumption that Wednesday fitness testing, Thursday on ice. We don't have a schedule yet, so that it might be Thursday, Friday. But
yeah,
we
some
do
teams
know,
have announced rosters and things today, but the Flames aren't one of them.
As of yet, anyway.
Yes.
A few texts at 960-960. Huberto Lindholm together, if the chemistry is right. Remember, Jokinen Aginla was attempted many times. It just didn't work. I do remember that, Gord. Very, very vividly. Very good point. And this says, whichever line Jonathan Huberto ends up playing on, it's going to be very hard to replicate the top NHL line of last year. I'm also concerned that it seems whenever the Flames go into a season with the pressure of being one of the best teams, they seem to not do well. Also, the teams are getting younger and speedier, and Calgary's team is the opposite of all that. They do have Daryl Sutter, though, so I'm cautiously optimistic for next season. A few texts on that topic at 960-960. As we start to wrap things up on Hour 2 of Flames Talk, for Logan Gordon and for Aaron Howell, my name is Pat Steinberg, and don't forget, you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.